There was a movie poster, probably picked up at one of the local video stores for a buck or three, on the wall of the cubbyhole which served Detective John Lydecker as an office. It showed Dumbo the elephant cruising along with his magical ears outstretched. A headshot of Susan Day had been pasted over Dumbo's face, carefully cut to allow for the trunk. On the cartoon landscape below, someone had drawn a signpost which read, Derry, 250. Oh, charming, Ralph said. Lydecker laughed. Not very politically correct, is it? I think that's an understatement, Ralph said, wondering what Carolyn would have made of the poster. Wondering what Helen would make of it, for that matter. It was 2:45 on an overcast, chilly Monday afternoon, and he and Lydecker had just come across from the Derry County Courthouse, where Ralph had given his statement about his encounter with Charlie Pickering the day before. He had been questioned by an assistant district attorney who looked to Ralph as if he might be ready to start shaving in another year or two. Lydecker had accompanied him, as promised, sitting in the corner of the assistant DA's office and saying nothing. His promise to buy Ralph a cup of coffee turned out to be mostly a figure of speech. The evil-looking brew had come from the Silex in the corner of a cluttered second-floor police headquarters day room. Ralph sipped cautiously at his and was relieved to find it tasted a little better than it looked. Sugar? Cream? Lydecker asked. Gun to shoot it with? Ralph smiled and shook his head. Tastes fine, although it'd probably be a mistake to trust my judgment. I cut back to 2 cups a day last summer, and now it all tastes pretty good to me. Like me with cigarettes. The less I smoke, the better they taste. Sin's a bitch. Lydecker took out his little tube of toothpicks, shook one out, and stuck it in the corner of his mouth. Then he put his own cup on top of his computer terminal, went over to the Dumbo poster, and began to lever out the thumbtacks which held the corners. Don't do it on my account, Ralph said. It's your office. Wrong. Lydecker pulled the carefully scissored photo of Susan Day off the poster, balled it up, tossed it in the wastebasket. Then he began to roll the poster itself into a tight little cylinder. Oh? Then how come your name's on the door? It's my name, but the office belongs to you and your fellow taxpayers, Ralph. Also to any news vidiot with a minicam who happens to wander in here. And if this poster happened to show up on news at noon, I'd be in a world of hurt. I forgot to take it down when I left Friday night, and I had most of the weekend off. A rare occurrence around here, let me tell you. You didn't put it up, I take it. Ralph moved some papers off the tiny office's one extra chair and sat down. Nope. Some of the fellas had a party for me Friday afternoon, complete with cake, ice cream, and presents. Lydecker rummaged in his desk and came up with a rubber band. He slipped it around the poster so it wouldn't spring open again, peeked one amused eye through it at Ralph, then tossed it into the wastebasket. I got a set of those days-of-the-week panties with the crotches snipped out, a can of strawberry-scented vaginal douche, a packet of Friends of Life anti-abortion literature, said literature including a comic book called Denise's Unwanted Pregnancy, and that poster. I guess it wasn't a birthday party, huh? Nope. Lydecker cracked his knuckles and sighed at the ceiling. The boys were celebrating my appointment to a special detail. Ralph could see faint flickers of blue aura around Lydecker's face and shoulders. But in this case, he didn't have to try and read them. It's Susan Day, isn't it? You got the job of protecting her while she's in town. Hole in one. Of course, the state police will be around, but they stick pretty much to traffic control in situations like this. There may be some FBI, too, but what they do mostly is hang back, take pictures, and give each other the secret club sign. She's got her own security people, doesn't she? Yes, but I don't know how many or how good. I talked to the head guy this morning, and he's at least coherent. But we have to put in our own guys. 5 of them, according to the orders I got on Friday. That's me, plus 4 guys, who'll volunteer as soon as I tell them to. The object is... Wait a minute, you'll like this. Lydecker shuffled through the papers on his desk, found the one he was looking for, and held it up. To maintain a strong presence and high visibility. He dropped the paper again and grinned at Ralph. The grin did not have a lot of humor in it. In other words, if someone tries to shoot the bitch or give her an acid shampoo, we want Lizette Benson and the other vidiots to at least record the fact that we were there. Lydecker looked at the rolled-up poster leaning in his wastebasket and flipped at the bird. How can you dislike someone so much when you've never even met her? I don't just dislike her, Ralph. I fucking hate her. Listen, I'm a Catholic. My loving mother was a Catholic. My kids, if I ever have any, are all going to be altar boys at St. Joe's. Great. Being a Catholic's great. They even let you eat meat on Friday now. But if you think being Catholic means I'm in favor of making abortions illegal again, you got the wrong puppy. See? I'm the Catholic who gets to question the guys who beat their kids with rubber hoses or push them downstairs after a night of drinking good Irish whiskey and getting all sentimental about their mothers. Lydecker fished inside his shirt and brought out a small gold medallion. He placed it on his fingers and tilted it toward Ralph. Mary, Mother of Jesus. I've worn this since I was 13. 5 years ago, I arrested a man wearing one just like it. He had just boiled his 2-year-old stepson. This is a true thing, I'm telling you. Guy put on a great big pot of water, and when it was boiling, he picked the kid up by the ankles and dropped him into the pot like it was a lobster. Why? Because the kid wouldn't stop wetting the bed, he told us. I saw the body, and I'll tell you what. After you've seen something like that, the photos the right-to-life assholes like to show of vacuum abortions don't look so bad. Lydecker's voice had picked up a slight tremor. What I remember most of all is how the guy was crying and how he kept holding onto that Mary medallion around his neck and saying he wanted to go to confession. May be proud to be a Catholic, Ralph, let me tell you. And as far as the Pope goes, I don't think he should be allowed to have an opinion until he's had a kid himself. Or at least spent a year or so taking care of cracked babies. Okay, Ralph said. What's your problem with Susan Day? She's stirring the motherfucking pot, Lydecker cried. She comes into my town and I have to protect her. Fine. I've got good men and with just a pinch of luck, I think we can probably see her out of town with her head still on and her tits pointing the right way. But what about what happens before and what happens after? Do you think she cares about any of that? Do you think the people who run woman care give much of a shit about the side effects as far as that goes? I don't know. The woman care advocates are a little less prone to violence than the friends of life. But in terms of the all-important ass-ache quotient, they're not much different. Do you know what this was all about when it started? Ralph cast his memory back to his first conversation about Susan Day, the one he'd had with Ham Davenport. For a moment, he almost had it. Then it squiggled away. The insomnia had won again. He shook his head. Zoning, Lydecker said, and laughed with disgusted amazement. Plain old garden variety zoning regulations. Great, huh? Early this summer, two of our more conservative city councillors, George Tandy and Emma Wheaton, petitioned the zoning committee to reconsider the zone with woman care in it. The idea being to kind of gerrymander the place out of existence. I doubt if that's exactly the right word, but you get the gist, don't you? Sure. Uh-huh. So the pro-choicers ask Susan Day to come to town and make a speech. Help them to raise a war chest to combat the pro-life Grinches. The only problem is the Grinches never had a chance of rezoning District 7, and the woman care people knew it. Hell, one of their directors, June Halliday, is on the city council. She and the Wheaton bitch just about spit at each other when they pass in the hall. Rezoning District 7 was a pipe dream from the start because woman care is technically a hospital, just like Derry Home, which is only a stone's throw away. If you change the zoning laws to make woman care illegal, you do the same to one of only 3 hospitals in Derry County, the 3rd largest county in the state of Maine. So it was never going to happen. But that's okay, because it was never about that in the first place. It was about being pissy and in your face, about being an ass ache. And for most of the pro-choices, one of the guys I work with calls them the whale people, it's about being right. Right? I don't get you. It isn't enough that a woman can walk in there and get rid of the troublesome little fishy growing inside her anytime she wants. The pro-choicers want the argument to end. What they want, down deep, is for people like Dan Dalton to admit they're right. And that'll never happen. It's more likely that the Arabs and the Jews will decide it was all a mistake and throw down their weapons. I support the right of a woman to have an abortion if she really needs to have one. But the pro-choicers, holier-than-thou attitude makes me want to puke. They're the new Puritans, as far as I'm concerned. People who believe that if you don't think the way they do, you're going to hell. Only their version is a place where all you get on the radio is hillbilly music, and all you can find to eat is chicken-fried steak. You sound pretty bitter. Try sitting on a powder keg for 3 months and see how it makes you feel. Tell me this. Do you think Pickering would have stuck a knife in your armpit yesterday if it hadn't been for Woman Care, the Friends of Life, and Susan Leave My Sacred Twat Alone Day? Ralph appeared to give the question serious thought, but what he was really doing was watching John Lydecker's aura. It was a healthy dark blue, but the edges were tinged with rapidly shifting greenish light. It was this edging which interested Ralph. He had an idea he knew what it meant. Finally, he said, "No, I guess not." "Me either. You got wounded in a war that's already been decided, Ralph, and you won't be the last. But if you went to the Whale People, or to Susan Day, and opened your shirt and pointed at the bandage and said, 'This is partly your fault, so own the part that's yours,' they'd raise their hands and say, 'Oh, no, goodness, no. We're sorry you got hurt, Ralph. We Whale Watchers abhor violence. But it wasn't our fault. We have to keep Woman Care open. We have to man and woman the barricades. And if a little spilled blood is what it takes to do that, then so be it. But it's not about Woman Care, and that's what drives me absolutely bug-fuck. It's about abortion." "Shit, no. Abortion rights are safe in Maine and in Derry, no matter what Susan Day says at the Civic Center Friday night. This is about whose team is the best team, about whose side God's on. It's about who's right. I wish they'd all just sing, 'We are the champions,' and go get drunk." Ralph threw back his head and laughed. Lydecker laughed with him. "So they're assholes," he finished with a shrug. "But there are assholes. Does that sound like I'm joking? I'm not. Woman Care, Friends of Life, Body Watch, Daily Bread, they're our assholes, Derry assholes, and I really don't mind watching out for our own. That's why I took this job and why I stay with it. But you'll have to forgive me if I'm less than crazy about being tapped to watch out for some long-stemmed American beauty from New York who's going to fly in here and give an incendiary speech and then fly out with a few more press clippings and enough material for Chapter 5 of her new book. To our faces, she'll talk about what a wonderful little grassroots community we are. And when she gets back to her duplex on Park Avenue, she'll tell her friends about how she hasn't managed to shampoo the stink of our paper mills out of her hair yet. She is woman. Hear her roar. And if we're lucky, the whole thing will quiet down with no one dead or disabled." Ralph had become sure of what those greenish flickers meant. "But you're scared, aren't you?" he asked. Lydecker looked at him, surprised. "Shows, does it?" "Only a little," Ralph said, and thought, "Just in your aura, John, that's all. Just in your aura." "Yeah, I'm scared. On a personal level, I'm scared of fucking up the assignment, which has absolutely no upside to compensate for all the things that can go wrong. On a professional level, I'm scared of something happening to her on my watch. On a community level, I'm fucking terrified of what happens if there's some sort of confrontation and the genie comes out of the bottle." "More coffee, Ralph?" "I'll pass. I ought to be going soon anyway. What's going to happen to Pickering?" He didn't actually care much about Charlie Pickering's fate, but the big cop would probably think it strange if he asked about May Locker before he asked about Pickering. Suspicious, maybe. "Steve Anderson, the ADA who questioned you, and Pickering's court-appointed lawyer are probably horse-trading even as we speak. Pickering's guy will be saying he might be able to get his client. The thought of Charlie Pickering being anyone's client for anything sort of blows my mind, by the way. To plead out to second-degree assault. Anderson will say the time has come to put Pickering away for good, and he's going for attempted murder. Pickering's lawyer will pretend to be shocked, and tomorrow your buddy is going to be charged with first-degree assault with a deadly weapon and bound over for trial. Then, possibly in December, but more likely early next year, you'll be called as the star witness. Bail? It'll probably be set in the $40,000 range. You can get out on 10% if the rest can be secured in event of flight. But Charlie Pickering doesn't have a house, a car, or even a Timex watch. In the end, he's liable to go back to Juniper Hill, but that's really not the object of the game. We're going to be able to keep him off the street for quite a while this time, and with people like Charlie, that's the object of the game. Any chance the Friends of Life might go his bail? Nah, Ed Deepnoe spent a lot of last week with him, the two of them drinking coffee in the bagel shop. I imagine Ed was giving Charlie the lowdown on the Centurions and the King of Diamonds. Crimson King is what Ed... Whatever, Lydecker agreed, waving a hand. But most of all, I imagine he spent the time explaining how you were the devil's right-hand man, and how only a smart, brave, and dedicated fella like Charlie Pickering could take you out of the picture. You make him sound like such a calculating shit, Ralph said. He was remembering the Ed Deepnoe he'd played chess with before Carolyn had fallen ill. That Ed had been an intelligent, well-spoken, civilized man with a deep capacity for kindness. Ralph still found it all but impossible to reconcile that Ed with the one he'd first glimpsed in July of 1992. He'd come to think of the more recent arrival as Rooster Ed. Not just a calculating shit, a dangerous calculating shit, Lydecker said. For him, Charlie was just a tool, like a paring knife you'd use to peel an apple with. If the blade snaps off a paring knife, you don't run to the knife grinders to get a new one put on. That's too much trouble. You toss it in the wastebasket and get a new paring knife instead. That's the way guys like Ed treat guys like Charlie. And since Ed is the Friends of Life, for the time being at least, I don't think you have to worry about Charlie making bail. In the next few days, he's going to be lonelier than a Maytag repairman. Okay? Okay, Ralph said. He was a little appalled to realize he felt sorry for Pickering. I want to thank you for keeping my name out of the papers, too. If you were the one who did it, that is. There had been a brief mention of the incident in the Derry News Police Beat column, but it said only that Charles H. Pickering had been arrested on a weapons charge at the Derry Public Library. Sometimes we ask them for a favor, sometimes they ask us for one, Lydecker said, standing up. It's how things work in the real world. If the nuts in the Friends of Life and the prigs in the Friends of Woman Care ever discover that, my job is going to get a lot easier. Ralph plucked the rolled-up Dumbo poster from the wastebasket, then stood up on his side of Lydecker's desk. Could I have this? I know a little girl who might really like it in a year or so. Lydecker held out his hands expansively. Be my guest. Think of it as a little premium for being a good citizen. Just don't ask for my crotchless panties. Ralph laughed. Wouldn't think of it. Seriously, I appreciate you coming in. Thanks, Ralph. No problem. He reached across the desk, shook Lydecker's hand, then headed for the door. He felt absurdly like Lieutenant Columbo on TV. All he needed was the cigar and the ratty trench coat. He put his hand on the knob, then paused and turned back. Can I ask you about something totally unrelated to Charlie Pickering? Fire away. This morning in the Red Apple store, I heard that Mrs. Locker, my neighbor up the street, died in the night. Nothing so surprising about that. She had emphysema. But there are police line tapes up between the sidewalk and her front yard, plus a sign on the door saying the site has been sealed by the Derry PD. Do you know what it's about? Lydecker looked at him so long and hard that Ralph would have felt acutely uncomfortable, if not for the man's aura. There was nothing in it which communicated suspicion. God, Ralph, you're taking these things a little too seriously, aren't you? Well, maybe yes and maybe no. Either way, he was glad that the green flickers at the edges of Lydecker's aura had not reappeared. "Why are you looking at me that way?" Ralph asked. "If I presumed or spoke out of turn, I'm sorry." "Not at all," Lydecker said. "It's a little weird, that's all. If I tell you about it, can you keep it quiet?" "Yes. It's your downstairs tenant I'm chiefly worried about. When the word discretion is mentioned, it's not the prof I think of." Ralph laughed haughtily. "I won't say a word to him. Scout's honor. But it's interesting you'd mention him. Bill went to school with Mrs. Locker way back when. Grammar school." "Man, I can't imagine the prof in grammar school," Lydecker said. "Can you?" "Sort of," Ralph said. But the picture which rose in his mind was an exceedingly peculiar one. Bill McGovern, looking like a cross between Little Lord Fauntleroy and Tom Sawyer in a pair of knickers, long white socks, and a Panama hat. "We're not sure what happened to Mrs. Locker," Lydecker said. "What we do know is that shortly after 3 a.m., 911 logged an anonymous call from someone, a male, who claimed to have just seen two men, one carrying a pair of scissors, come out of Mrs. Locker's house." "She was killed?" Ralph exclaimed, realizing two things simultaneously, that he sounded more believable than he ever would have expected, and that he had just crossed a bridge. He hadn't burned it behind him, not yet anyway, but he would not be able to go back to the other side without a lot of explanations. Lydecker turned his hands palms up and shrugged. "If she was, it wasn't with a pair of scissors or any other sharp object. There wasn't a mark on her." That, at least, was something of a relief. "On the other hand, it's possible to scare someone to death, especially someone who's old and sick, during the commission of a crime," Lydecker said. "Anyway, this'll be easier to explain if you let me just tell you what I know. It won't take long, believe me." "Of course, sorry." "Want to hear something funny? The first person I thought of when I looked over the 911 call sheet was you." "Because of the insomnia, right?" Ralph asked. His voice was steady. "That, and the fact that the caller claimed to have seen these men from his living room. Your living room looks out on the avenue, doesn't it?" "Yes." "Uh-huh. I even thought of listening to the tape. Then I remembered that you were coming in today, and that you're sleeping through again." "That's right, isn't it?" Without an instant of pause or consideration, Ralph set fire to the bridge he had just crossed. "Well, I'm not sleeping like I did when I was 16 and working two after-school jobs. I won't kid you about that. But if I was the guy who called 911 last night, I did it in my sleep. Exactly what I figured. Besides, if you saw something a little off-kilter on the street, why would you make the call anonymously?" "I don't know," Ralph said and thought. "But suppose it was a little more than off-kilter, John. Suppose it was completely unbelievable." "Me neither," Lydecker said. "Your place has a view of Harris Avenue, yes. But so do about three dozen others. And just because the guy who made the call said he was inside, that doesn't mean he really was, does it?" "I guess not. There's a payphone outside the Red Apple he could have called from, plus one outside the liquor store. A couple in Strawford Park, too, if they work." "Actually, there are four in the park, and they all work. We checked." "Why would he lie about where he was calling from?" "The most likely reason is because he was lying about the rest of what he had to say, too. Anyway, Donna Hoggins said the guy sounded very young and sure of himself." The words were barely out of his mouth before Lydecker winced and put a hand on top of his head. "That didn't come out just the way I meant it, Ralph. Sorry." "It's okay. The idea that I sound like an old fart on a pension is not exactly a new concept to me. I am an old fart on a pension. Go on." "Chris Nell was the responding officer, first on the scene. Do you remember him from the day we arrested Ed?"
"I remember the name."
"Uh-huh. Steve Utterback was the responding detective and the OIC officer in charge. He's a good man." "The guy in the watch cap," Ralph thought. "The lady was dead in bed, but there was no sign of violence. Nothing obvious taken either, although old ladies like May Locker aren't usually into a lot of real huckable stuff. No VCR, no big fancy stereo, nothing like that.
She did have one of those Bose waves, though, and two or three pretty nice pieces of jewelry. This is not to say that there wasn't other jewelry as nice or nicer, but... But why would a burglar take some and not all? Exactly. What's more interesting in this case is that the front door, the one the 911 caller said he saw the two men coming out of, was locked from the inside. Not just a spring lock, either. There was a thumb bolt and a chain. Same with the back door, by the way. So if the 911 caller was on the up-and-up, and if May Locker was dead when the two guys left, who locked the doors? Maybe it was the Crimson King, Ralph thought, and to his horror, almost said aloud, I don't know. What about the windows? Locked. Thumb latches turned. And just in case that's not Agatha Christie enough for you, Steve says the storms were on. One of the neighbors told him Mrs. Locker hired a kid to put them on just last week. Sure she did, Ralph said. Pete Sullivan, the same kid who delivers the newspaper. Now that I think of it, I saw him doing it. Mystery novel bullshit, Lydecker said. But Ralph thought Lydecker would have swapped Susan Day for May Locker in about 3 seconds. The prelim medical came in just before I left for the courthouse to meet you. I had a glance at it. Myocardial this, thrombosis that. Heart failure's what it comes down to. Right now we're treating the 911 call as a crank. We get 'em all the time, all cities do. And the lady's death as a heart attack brought on by her emphysema. Just a coincidence, in other words. That conclusion might save him a lot of trouble, if it flew, that was. But Ralph could hear the disbelief in his own voice. Yeah, I don't like it either. Neither does Steve, which is why the house has been sealed. State forensics will give it a complete top to bottom, probably starting tomorrow morning. Meanwhile, Mrs. Locker has taken a little ride down to Augusta for a more comprehensive post-mortem. Who knows what it'll show? Sometimes they do show things. You'd be surprised. I suppose I would, Ralph said. Lydecker tossed his toothpick into the trash, appeared to brood for a moment, then brightened up. Hey, here's an idea. Maybe I'll get someone in clerical to make a dupe of that 911 call. I could bring it over and play it for you. Maybe you'll recognize the voice. Who knows? Stranger things have happened. I suppose they have, Ralph said, smiling uneasily. Anyway, it's Utterback's case. Come on, I'll see you out. In the hall, Lydecker gave Ralph another searching look. This one made Ralph feel a good deal more uncomfortable because he had no idea what it meant. The auras had disappeared again. He tried on a smile that felt lame. Something hanging out of my nose that shouldn't be? Nope. I'm just amazed at how good you look for someone who went through what you did yesterday. And compared to how you looked last summer, if that's what honeycomb can do, I'm going to buy myself a beehive. Ralph laughed, as though this were the funniest thing he had ever heard. 1:42 a.m., Tuesday morning. Ralph sat in the wing chair, watching wheels of fine mist revolve around the streetlights. Up the street, the police line tapes hung dispiritedly in front of May Locker's house. Barely 2 hours sleep tonight, and he found himself again thinking that dead might be better. No more insomnia then, no more long waits for dawn in this hateful chair. No more days when he seemed to be looking at the world through the god-all invisible shield they used to prattle about on the toothpaste commercials. Back when TV had been almost brand new, that had been, in the days when he had yet to find the first strands of gray in his hair, and he was always asleep 5 minutes after he and Carol had finished making love. And people keep talking about how good I look. That's the weirdest part of it. Except it wasn't. Considering some of the things he'd seen just lately, a few people saying he looked like a new man was far, far down on his list of oddities. Ralph's eyes returned to May Locker's house. The place had been locked up, according to Lydecker, but Ralph had seen the two little bald doctors come out the front door. He had seen them, goddammit. But had he? Had he really? Ralph cast his mind back to the previous morning, sitting down in this same chair with a cup of tea and thinking, let the play begin. And then he had seen those two little bald bastards come out. Damn it, he'd seen them come out of May Locker's house. Except maybe that was wrong. because he hadn't really been looking at Mrs. Locker's house. He had been pointed more in the direction of the red apple. He thought the flicker of movement in the corner of his eye was probably Rosalie, and had turned his head to check. That was when he'd seen the little bald doctors on the stoop of May Locker's house. He was no longer entirely sure he had seen the front door open. Maybe he had just assumed that part. And why not? They sure as hell hadn't come up Mrs. Locker's walk. You can't be sure of that, Ralph. Except he could. At 3 a.m, Harris Avenue was as still as the mountains of the moon. The slightest movement anywhere within the range of his vision registered. Had Doc Number 1 and Doc Number 2 come out the front door? The longer Ralph thought about it, the more he doubted it. Then what happened, Ralph? Did they maybe step out from behind the guard all invisible shield? Or how's this? Maybe they walked through the door, like those ghosts that used to haunt Cosmo Topper in that old TV show. And the craziest thing of all was that felt just about right. What? That they walked through the fucking door? Oh, Ralph, you need help. You need to talk to someone about what's happening to you. Yes, that was the one thing of which he was sure. He needed to spill all this to someone before it drove him crazy. But who? Carolyn would have been best, but she was dead. Lydecker? The problem there was that Ralph had already lied to him about the 911 call. Why? Because the truth would have sounded insane. It would have sounded, in fact, as if he had caught Ed Deepnose paranoia like a cold. And wasn't that really the most likely explanation when you looked at the situation dead on? But that's not it, he whispered. They were real. The auras, too. It's a long walk back to Eden, sweetheart. And watch out for those green, gold, white man tracks while you're on the way. Tell someone. Lay it all out. Yes. And he ought to do it before John Lydecker listened to that 911 tape and showed up asking for an explanation. Wanting to know, basically, why Ralph had lied and what Ralph actually knew about the death of May Locker. Tell someone. Lay it all out. But Carolyn was dead. Lydecker was still too new. Helen was lying low at the woman care shelter somewhere out in the Willy Wags. And Lois Chass might gossip to her girlfriends. Who did that leave? The answer became clear once he put it to himself that way. But Ralph still felt a surprising reluctance to talk to McGovern about the things which had been happening to him. He remembered the day he had found Bill sitting on a bench by the softball field, crying over his old friend and mentor, Bob Paulhurst. Ralph had tried to tell Bill about the auras, and it had been as if McGovern couldn't hear him. He'd been too busy running through his well-thumbed script on the subject of how shitty it was to grow old. Ralph thought of the satiric raised eyebrow, the unfailing cynicism, the long face always so gloomy, the literary illusions, which usually made Ralph smile but often left him feeling a tad inferior as well. And then there was McGovern's attitude toward Lois, condescending, even a touch cruel. Yet this was a long way from being fair, and Ralph knew it. Bill McGovern was capable of kindness, and perhaps far more important in this case, understanding. He and Ralph had known each other for over 20 years. For the last 10 of those years, they had lived in the same building. He'd been one of Carolyn's pallbearers. And if Ralph couldn't talk to Bill about what had been happening to him, who could he talk to? The answer seemed to be no one.